Welcome to La Liga Weekly. This weekend, we learned that Barca need a big lad up front, and if they can't afford Luke de Jong, Andy Carroll's available. We also learned that Atleti would be relegated if they were playing in the Segunda. Their extraordinary catalogue of failure against the worst teams continues. Thankfully, it's Manchester City in midweek. And we had confirmation that everything is a penalty. Another seven this weekend. Levante have had nine this season. You really can't blame the referee, lads, if you do go down at the end of this campaign. Alexander Isak couldn't even successfully take his penalty, let alone score it. The relegation battle has moved. The bottom two aren't looking good. The old three-manager strategy rarely works, fellas. But there are some mid-table teams who are getting a bit nervous. In fact, there are some interesting battles all over La Liga. So those of you who've written it off as a pointless farmers league that no one cares about might want to reconsider your opinion. And by that, I mean Unai Emery. Yes, a quick European preview is in order as the devilish Spaniards prepare to cheat their way to success against our brave British lads. Oh, sorry, I seem to have picked up someone else's script. Right. I didn't name whose script I'm reading. Patreon.com, everybody, if you want to join us on Patreon for when Terry, in the European weeks, Terry analyses what's happened in the European games. And I moan about the coverage. That's what happens over on Patreon. So you're all welcome to join us. Thank you to the Patreons who have. Shall we crack straight on with the business? In fact, one of our Patreons, Terry, has asked us a question here. Philip says, remind me again, how many points LDJ has won for Barca behind Pedri and Dembele? Still a shout for the most important player. I think La Liga TV said seven last night. I make it six, I think I'm counting. But whatever, it's a lot of points. For a guy who nobody loves, Luke de Jong, but maybe they should. I mean, it was a brilliant way to cap off the weekend, wasn't it? Unless you're a Levante fan, of course, and you were hoping that they would win. I mean, a crazy game in many ways. Three penalties for Levante, but Barcelona still somehow battle through and win the game.
Yeah, I mean, nothing much happened in the first half, apart from the runs, the mazy dribble from Morelles. And Barcelona were poor. In their Patreon podcast, they said, I thought they were poor against Eintracht Frankfurt, and I thought they were poor against Levante, and that they got away with this. And it's quite difficult to suggest they got away with it in the fact that they conceded three penalties. Two were scored, one was missed. They had to make substitutions, which transformed the game, clearly with Pedri and Gavi linking up immediately almost to get Pedri's goal. And then Luke de Jong, a player who's, as the season has progressed on the podcast, regular listeners will know that I have a soft spot for Luke de Jong because I was wondering how it is possible to play a game of football in front of 60, 70,000 supporters who hate you, basically. They hate your style of play. They hated everything he stood for. They hated him because he was to do with Ronald Koeman. They hated him because he was 6'4" and not your classic Barcelona type striker, and they let it be known that they didn't want to play like that anywhere near their football club. For him to have turned that around in the manner that he has done, my sympathy was with him in that situation, and then my admiration was with him for I mean, people are going to say, well, what else could he have done? Yeah, he could have buckled, he could have gone under, but what we've seen is a really, really honest professional that relishes the opportunity at each stage of his career of playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world and embracing the challenge and recognising what he is. He knows he's not Luis Suarez, he's not Neymar, he's not Messi, he's not David Villa, Henri. He knows that. But what he's proved is that he's honest, hardworking. His fundamentals as a big traditional striker have served him well in a decent career. And that's what he does. He comes on. He knows his position. He knows he is probably Xavi's last resort. I'm pretty sure Xavi is sitting there thinking, oh, no, I've got to use Luke de Jong again. It's not the road that Xavi wants to go down, but it is proving to be incredibly successful because the players are switched on. When he does come on now, they know if they get the ball wide, get it crossed. His movement for the goal last night for the winning goal is sensational. How he loses Postigo. First of all, he goes towards the far post, runs across the defender. Jordi Alba's in tandem with him and whips it into the right area. And it's a fantastic header. And it wins Barcelona the game. It wins them more points, which he has continued to do since Xavi's been manager. And you know, I think it's a great little story. I mean, he's not going to go down as one of the legends of Barcelona, but now you hear them singing his name. The supporters are right behind him. Shows how fickle supporters can be. That, you know, they've still got Aubameyang, and you know, other strikers involved at the club. But Luke de Jong now is, they've got affection for him. So to turn that around has been incredible. And you know, fair play to him. Fair play to Xavi for using him. But it's an obvious tactic to use. I mean, in the days of five substitutes now, but why, it kind of makes sense that, you know, you joked about Andy Carroll. I'm not saying Andy Carroll should play for Barcelona or Real Madrid. But to have that different type of option, whoever you are, whatever team you are, whatever style of football you play, it can be effective. So, you know, in the days of three subs, maybe different. But now I think when you've got the possibility of five subs or maybe 9 or 10 on the bench, why not have a wild card? Why not have someone totally different that can disrupt opposing teams, disrupt results, and bring you success in the way that Luke de Jong has, the 6 or 7 points that he's helped Barcelona get, have moved them from, you know, 7th place, I think it is. They would be if it wasn't for the goals of Luke de Jong. So it's an astonishing story. But Barcelona were poor in this game, I thought.
I'll unmute myself and answer your point, shall I? Yes, sorry, I had a little cough. So, right. Yes, and as you say, as they had been in the week as well, I mean, there's still a lot of sorting out to do at Barcelona, isn't there, in terms of what's happening on the pitch. You know, when they played so well in the Clásico, there's a danger there that you think, oh, right, okay, that's it, all solved then, and Xavi's, you know, ticked and everything's sorted and it's all perfect. You know, there's still a mess. They're still left with a terrible legacy from Bartomeu, aren't they? And, you know, and this summer, as we have discussed before, there's another complicated conundrum to be sorted out, isn't there, for Barcelona?
Yeah, and I think what we're seeing from Xavi at the moment, he's trying to rotate things. So he rotated against Eintracht Frankfurt, he rotated again against Levante. And he's probably finding out one or two things more about the players that he's using at the moment. So I think the squad needs trimming. It does need to sort out who he definitely wants to keep. He needs to find out the future regarding Dembele. What's going to happen with Adama Traore? He's got some defensive positions to sort out, which means probably players moving on before anyone else can come in. But it in terms of, it's a healthy squad at the moment, far healthier than it was, because Ansu Fati's return is imminent as well. So that adds another problem, a good problem for Xavi to solve in where is he going to play? Who is he going to play instead of? Probably between now and the end of the season, I would imagine the sensible approach would be to ease him back in slowly but surely. Perhaps we won't see him be a regular, but he might be the new super sub as opposed to Luke de Jong. But, you know, if they want to keep going in Europe, they want to finish second at the very least. I'm sure we'll see Ansu Fati. So, you know, Pedri and Gavi coming on, it's ridiculous. You look at them, you think 17 and 19, you completely forget, because they come on and change a game in a manner that is ridiculous for their age. I mean, Pedri at 19 scored another great goal. Gavi at 17, it's ridiculous that we don't see many 17-year-olds in any other big clubs in Europe playing on a regular basis and being an important player. I'm trying to think about, I think Jude Bellingham is only 18 still.
Yeah. It's a rare example. Even at smaller clubs, I'll look it up while you try to think of one.
Premier League teams are not using 17-year-olds. I can't think of one that's made an impact this season in the Premier League. It's interesting to see how you choose and plot a path for a young player, a football club. If you're as a parent of a young player, where do you go? Because you might think, oh, start smaller at somewhere like Birmingham, like Jude Bellingham, for instance, and you get them moved to Dortmund. They're still now going to Real Madrid. But then you have Pedri and Gavi who have gone to Barcelona and are ripping it up at 17 and 19 years of age.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult to plot a path for a young professional footballer.
Gavi is the youngest player, but four 17-year-olds have had minutes this season. Christian Mosquera at Valencia has had 114 minutes. Alvaro Bastida of Cadiz and Ilias Barca played two games, 124 minutes. It's slightly more than I thought, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, with Barcelona as well, it's an interesting topic in the fact that would they have got the playing time if it had been the old Barcelona that didn't have money issues?
Yeah.
So it's that I'm sure that this proves the talent is there. And if Barcelona, I know they bought Pedri from Las Palmas. I must be honest, I absolutely love watching them play. They've got an attitude as well. They're going to be compared to Xavi and Iniesta because they play in midfield, they play alongside each other. And Xavi and Iniesta are no longer playing for Barcelona. But there's differences about them. They've got a chippy little attitude, the pair of them. I see them as street footballers that were, you know, brought up in Gran Canaria, as in Pedri was, brought up in Sevilla, which Pedri was. It's a different type. Then they've come to Barcelona still at very young ages, but they've still retained that, I would call street football, where they're playing on AstroTurf with their mates in the various leagues they grew up in and stuff like that, you know, polishing their skills. But then their maturity and their attitude is, I mean, Pedri is running games. Gavi wants to pick a fight with everyone, and he's 17. He came on against Sevilla last week, and first thing he did was try to shove and pick a fight with Diego Carlos.
Yeah.
So we never saw Xavi and Iniesta doing that. So that's the difference in their mentality and their spirit. They're fantastic footballers, and they've got this different spirit that between, I think the pair of them bounce off each other as well. You can see they're very similar in terms of personality. But it's a big. I can't think of 17-year-olds playing on a regular basis in the Premier League.
Really. No. I've just looked it up. Two 17-year-olds have had any minutes in the Premier League: Cade Gordon and Evan Ferguson. But they've had a few minutes each. So yeah, it's not normal. At all, is it, to be playing regularly and to be so important?
It used to be in England.
Yeah.
But I think that's where money has picked up. I made my debut. I was 17 and 6 days old.
Yeah.
I played for England youth team that won the European Youth Tournament. We were UEFA champions, and we had a team at under 18 level, and every single one of us was playing irregular in the first team.
Mm. Yeah.
So now I look at the under 21s of England, I don't know half the names.
Yeah.
But no, more than that. There's most, I don't know the most of the names are either out on loan at lower league clubs or playing in under 23 football at the Premier League club. So that's how it used to be, because we weren't competing against players from all over the world when I played. Yeah. So that's what's changed. So it's big business, and teams don't want to run the risk of playing children, basically.
Yes. But Gavi doesn't look like he doesn't act like a child, does he? He looks very young, doesn't he? But
can't tie shoelaces. Yeah. That's one thing. And this time last year, he was still at school.
Yeah, incredible, isn't it?
Now he's coming on and rescuing Barcelona. So those two, that I wanted to speak about them on the podcast because they're extraordinary talented players, international players as well now. And you can imagine in the World Cup, Luis Enrique picking the pair of them on a regular basis. So what they've done is incredible. Barcelona need to improve, need to tie things up. They had a period where their football was fluent under Xavi. It's not at the moment. Maybe that's the changes that he's made to try and keep players fresh. Maybe, you know, Pique being injured means he has to reshuffle the back four. Giving away three penalties isn't ideal. I thought the one against Eric Garcia was unlucky. The other two, I thought, were fouls. Stegen makes a good save from Roger Marti. Interesting idea from Levante to have three different penalty takers for all three. Morales and Malero were successful. Roger Marti was a poor penalty, good save by Ter Stegen. But Barcelona had to grind out a result and come down in the end to Luke de Jong coming on and scoring a smashing header.
Levante have scored five of their nine penalties this season. That doesn't, you know, they're not helping themselves, are they, with that? Apansky says, Levante employed the same system used by Frankfurt and Barca struggled against both. How do we navigate Thursday? How do you rate our chances of qualification? He's a Barca fan, obviously.
Yeah, I think they'll qualify because I think they will play better. Barcelona had one or two complaints about the playing surface. Frankfurt, who are a good team, knocked out Betis in the previous round. Away from home, atmosphere is always good in Germany. But I do expect Barcelona to come through comfortably. And I just think with Barcelona, they, like a few other teams, they have their own style. No matter what the opposing team play, they don't need to change. They just have to do what they do better. And in the last two games, I think they've been below par. We saw the win against Real Madrid. they haven't reached that level of performance again since that match. And they're going to have to go through against Eintracht Frankfurt. So it's a massive game for Barcelona. I think my prediction is they go through.
Right. So let's go to Atleti, shall we? I think, because that was extraordinary. I was going to say an extraordinary result, Terry. It's not, because they always lose against the worst teams in the division. So they were beat 1-0 by Mallorca. Funnily enough, another penalty. Their results. So here's some results, Terry. Alaves away 0-1. Levante away 2-2. Mallorca at home 1-2 defeat. Granada away lost 2-1. Levante lost 1-0 at home. Mallorca lost 1-0 away. It's extraordinary, isn't it? They won those games, top of the league. You know, literally, it's cost them the league, their record against those teams.
And that's all it is. When you look at the difference between them and Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And you know, Real Madrid have gone under the radar this year in terms of we don't often speak about them in long terms.
Yeah.
Because there hasn't been any problems. They've managed to navigate their way through the whole season with just three defeats. And not making these mistakes that Atletico have made, that Barcelona made with the mess that they're in at the first half of the season. Real Madrid just ticked along nicely. So the one thing I would say from this game is, during periods of this season, Mallorca have been, I think they've been okay. They've had a really poor run of form. I think it's 7 straight defeats. They've made the managerial change. And I predicted that they will improve under Javier Aguirre. And what we're seeing is exactly that. They've got a system of play that's pretty basic, but they're working much harder. They're being more aggressive. They're being a bit braver in terms of their attacking play. And all of a sudden, they look like they've got a plan. He won't be changing 4 or 5 players every game. Luis Garcia Plaza, he lost the plot. He didn't know which was his best 11. His head becomes scrambled. You see in interviews after the game, he wasn't really sure what was going wrong, so he's changing it every week. I think there's the basics are there for Mallorca to have done better than they've done this season. They lost their way, and Aguirre, I think, is the perfect choice to come in. I thought it was quite easy to predict who was going down a month ago, but I think we've seen 1 or 2 managerial changes, and the way things have changed at the bottom, it's Mallorca, I think, under Aguirre, they've got a fighting chance. So it was always going to be a tough game for Atletico, and all the games are tough. You know, we're not seeing runaway victories hardly ever now in La Liga. But for Atletico to have this poor form, there was one shot on target again against Mallorca. And with me praising Mallorca, on the same hand, I'd have to say that Atletico should be still beating them, no matter how well Mallorca play. With the quality that Atletico have, I knew it was going to be a tough game. But I would expect more than one shot on target. And again, the performance from Atletico has cost them. It's astonishing you say those results have cost them the league title. Yet we look at them as a season as a whole over the season and think they're miles behind Real Madrid, and they are. But when you if that's all that needed rectifying was to beat the cannon fodder at the bottom of the league, then it's been a weird old season for Atletico.
Real opportunity missed, isn't it? So he left out João Félix at the weekend. Suarez played. Manchester City coming up in midweek. So they played what is described as a 5-5-0 formation against Man City in the first game. Yeah. How different will it be this time around? Can he do that again and try and make it a short game? Or does he try and... The other option that they do sometimes is try and blitz teams, isn't it, in the first 5 minutes or so? But this is Man City.
5 minutes. Yeah, 5 minutes. And attack in 5 minutes. I would hope, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, he would have watched the Man City Liverpool game yesterday, in which, it was thrilling, man. But the defence, if you can look at Man City and think, how do we beat Man City? Not how do we avoid getting beat by Man City? How do you beat Man City? You've got to look and say, we've got to get at them. You know, we've got to put them under pressure. We've got to close them down high up the pitch. We've got to try and get people in behind. We've try and get numbers forward into attacking positions. Make the most of the space which the fullbacks leave at times. You look at the two centre-backs for City that would probably play, Laporta and John Stones. If the fullbacks are missing, I think there's a chance for Atletico getting at those two. Just because of the way that City play. So I'd be surprised. Actually, I'd be surprised on both counts. I'd be surprised if Atletico just went for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be surprised, bearing in mind the circumstances of the tie, if they just sat back deep. So it's getting a balance, really, isn't it? But it's sometimes you can overcomplicate it. And I suggest Atletico should just play. Because people think that Atletico play like that every week. People think, don't watch Atletico often. Watch them in the Champions League, particularly against a team from the Premier League. People think Atletico play like that every week. And João Félix plays in that left-back, left-midfield position every week. They don't. And when they do attack, and when they do have control of the game, and when they do have possession, they are a really fast, hard-working, energetic team. That's what they have to be against City. You know, and City are in this middle of the games with Atletico and Liverpool. Atletico, they've got Liverpool again next weekend. You know, it's there for Atletico, who didn't exert much energy at the weekend, to play, I would imagine, their hungriest starting 11, their quickest starting 11, energetic starting 11, and let them off the leash. And it's all or nothing. They are still underdogs in this tie, Atletico. They were before it started. Will anybody criticise Simeone if Atletico were to go out in a way that they are at least having a go to try and beat Man City? I don't think anyone would. I think that's what the Atletico supporters would demand. Will he get criticism if they sit back behind the ball and it peters out, ends 0-0, and Man City go through 1-0 in aggregate? Then he would get criticism. So I think there's a certain freedom for Atletico and Simeone to have
it. Won't necessarily stop him, though, that will it?
I'm hopeful it will.
Right,
hopeful that, because I think if you go just to avoid defeat and avoid conceding, and what's plan B then? How do you score a goal?
Yeah.
So I would hope, I'm hoping that it is more of an attacking, it has to be more attacking than it was at the Etihad, that's for sure. But I'd like to see a really fast and furious performance from Atletico.
It's Simeone.
I remember Barcelona in the semi-final years ago in the Champions League as well. I think Sal scored an amazing goal, and they set about them so fast. That's what Atletico need to do in this game.
Simeone,
don't let City settle.
Simeone against Guardiola, Terry. It is going to be overcomplicated. That much I think we can guarantee. Let's do Real Madrid, and we'll look at their prospects against Chelsea as well. And in the light of a 2-0 win against Getafe, which wasn't the worst, wasn't the worst way to prepare, was it? You know, Getafe, a decent team, as we know. Benzema got the last 15 minutes off, and Vinny got a bit of a rest at the end. 3-1 up against Chelsea, deserved that margin. I think that was a fair margin of victory, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think, you know, Chelsea had chances. Courtois made a great save. Real Madrid had other chances. Benzema was superb in that game, wasn't he?
Yes.
His finish and the two headers that he put in were magnificent. So where are they looking? It's not done, this one, is it? Because Chelsea are a good team.
No. Yeah, and we saw the weekend with a City result.
Yeah.
Chelsea had at Southampton. No, it's not done, and Real Madrid will be aware of that. He was able to rest Kroos and Modric at the weekend as well, so that's, I think, great news.
Yeah.
And it was great news the way that the two players who replaced them, Fede Valverde, Camavinga were excellent in this game. Casemiro was really good again. And this was a very, very good performance from Real Madrid, because they're playing a hard-working, aggressive team that can be direct, that have a bit of confidence. And if Real Madrid weren't at it and weren't working hard, didn't match the work rate of Getafe, they would have struggled. But they didn't. It was a comprehensive 2-0 win. Dani Carvajal was rested. Lucas Vasquez came in and scores a goal. Casemiro scores a goal. So I was really impressed with how Real Madrid handled the win against Chelsea, then backing out with a solid performance against Getafe, one that tells you, you know, gives you clear indication of why they're going to be champions this year. Now, we're going to spend very little time talking about Real Madrid in this particular match, because they got the job done. They did it really well. They had great attitude, worked really hard. Big talking point would be Gareth Bale coming on. His attitude is it's amazing, isn't it, when he comes on and he just smiled and laughed at one of his teammates because he was getting booed and jeered and whistled. then changed as it went on. As many people booing and jeering him were cheering him, yeah, clapping
the,
him.
The counter, yeah.
So it was the interesting aspect to this game. But Real Madrid were excellent, but they were excellent against Chelsea. Courtois was brilliant in goal. One particular save from Azpilicueta. The attitude of Benzema, the leader of the team now, along with Luka Modric as well in midfield. All parts of their team played well. The defensive unit were really good. They dominated the midfield. The choice from Ancelotti to play Valverde as the extra midfield player helped them. And I expect that to be the case again. Because last season, they were outrun by Chelsea. You know, it was the semi-final. It was the later stage. It was later in the season. Zidane had been using the same players. He was starting to tinker with the system to cope with the opposition. Players had been injured and weren't certain whether they were going to play, like Varane and Ramos. They were in and out of the team through injury and risk in that second leg at Stamford Bridge. But in that, so that led you to believe that this was going to be, it's going to be a tough tie for Real Madrid still. But I was surprised at how well they played against Chelsea. And you're right. I mean, Benzema is just absolutely astonishing at the moment. He's, you know, the two-headed goals. Out of all the goals, I was impressed with the third one because he was chasing the lost calls. You know, he's a superstar striker who's in the form of his life. And yet he chases down the lost calls and he puts Mendy under problems, Rüdiger under problems and wins the ball back and scores a goal. If he doesn't make that 40-yard run, which was, it looked a lost cause, then, you know, Chelsea might have been on the verge of coming back into that game, having scored just before half-time to make it 2-1. Benzema and Real Madrid set up on the second half with a fantastic attitude. They've got great players. They're playing well. I expect them to go through. But I expect them to go through because I expect them to score again. So, therefore, it makes the task of Chelsea, how many goals have Chelsea got to get to actually get back in the game and get through. But you never know. You know, Chelsea can aim for a 2-0 win it to extra time.
Yeah. No way goals wrong.
It's not out of the question. So, it's still work to do, but Real Madrid again this weekend and against Chelsea, very, very impressive.
Sevilla, Terry. How many times have we talked about Sevilla? And they got the job done. 4-2 against Granada, actually entertaining us, kicked off the weekend with a fun game, late goals, you know, brilliant.
And you see, it's obvious with Sevilla that a lot of players missing through injury. Mm. And when you see the team now, and you see the bench looking stronger as well, you can kind of understand why Sevilla struggled. I've been critical of the style of play under Lopetegui, but when you suddenly see Papu Gomez coming off the bench and scoring a goal, and Lamela's starting up front, and other players on that have returned from being injured, it's clear that, you know, that injury issue definitely hampered them. And now you're seeing a stronger, more vibrant Sevilla. In saying that, they made hard work of this. I mean, they go 1-0 down, they equalise from Diego Carlos, and then, you know, it ends up conceding a goal from Victor Diaz in the 88th minute to make it 2-2 after Ocampos scored. And you're thinking, at 88 minutes, more drop points from Sevilla. I don't know where the 9 extra minutes came from, added on time. I'd never complain, to be honest. And Sevilla got a couple of goals. Rafa Mir off the bench, Papu Gomez off the bench. So that's what I'm talking about, the stronger bench now to get the win in the 93rd and 99th minute the goals. So Sevilla deserved the win. They were a better team. And it looked more like the Sevilla we saw predominantly for the first half of the season. So a clear indication the injured players coming back makes them a better team. And playing against opposition, they're in a relegation issue. They should win. Made hard work of it. But in the end, it looks like a stylish victory, which give them belief going into the big game next week against Real Madrid.
Yes. Right, let's crack on with this week, though. Betis won away to Cadiz. Again, the turnaround late on, wouldn't it? You know, a blow this one for Cadiz, wouldn't it? I mean, losing to Betis is obviously a disaster, but, you know, given that they were in a position to win the game to relatively late on, given that Mallorca beat Atleti, it's the trials and tribulations of being in a relegation battle, isn't it?
Exactly. Sergio González, each team deserves something from this game. Mm. And Betis were able to turn it around because you have that winning habit against a losing habit for Cadiz. As soon as Cadiz scored, it was, can we hold on to this lead? It kind of invited Betis back into the game and they took full advantage of it. And Teo with a lovely goal, move from Fekir. like the skill that led up to the goal. That was good and a good finish. Then Borja with a foul, with a penalty after a foul in the box, another penalty. But do you know what I liked about this game? It looked a colourful match, didn't it? It was lovely sunny weather. The Cadiz supporters with the yellow everywhere was great. And Betis had a travelling support, which I think they're the only team now that have that. Yeah. And it's a culture that's catching on with Betis, because I think, I'm led to believe, they're one of the highest supported teams in Spain, and their support is all around the country. Now, Cadiz and Betis, they're not far away, so that's useful in this occasion. But there's been other games now where I've seen, you know, Betis supporters in numbers in different parts of Spain where it's not easy to travel to. So to see that, the away support from Betis, it makes a much better spectacle for the league.
Yeah.
How we can encourage that, I don't know. For other teams, I've no idea.
But I mean, it
made it a really good watch, because yeah, it was a colourful game, a good game of football, and travelling rival support, which gave it a better atmosphere.
Yeah, trying would be a starting point, wouldn't it? You know, don't write it off before, because that's, if you speak to people in Spain and you say, well, you know, why people don't bother, it's a big country, not the culture. Try, make the tickets available, make the tickets cheap, there are things you can do to try and encourage away fans to go to games, and it makes games better, because away fans are better people than home fans, Terry.
It looked like the Betis supporters were really having fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you do. It's a better thing being an away fan. Because the supporters go
across, don't they, at the end of the game for 10 minutes. They're there clapping the Betis fans who are up high in the stand. And you kind of see the players looking and thinking, we're not used to it. Is this what we do? Do we go across and clap the away supporters? Our away support, our travelling supporters, it was great. So tough on Cadiz, excellent result for Betis, puts them right in the mix, back in the mix now for a top four spot, that's for sure. Atletico losing and Betis winning, it's really tightened things up at the top.
So my reference to the Farmers League that no one takes any notice of, Terry, Villarreal 1, Athletic Club 1, with 11 changes, just the 11 changes from Unai Emery, doesn't he? He's like, no secret about where his priorities are lying at the moment.
And it's obvious where they lie, because you look at their league position, it's unlikely they're going to get top four, unlikely they're going to get Europa League. So why wouldn't you? I mean, he's... eggs are being put into the basket of, if we're going to qualify for the Champions League next year, we've got to win this one. And the way they've played, I mean, they were okay. The 11 changes, still a decent team.
Yeah.
And they're playing against decent opposition. It was a good game of football. But we have to talk about the result and the performance against Bayern Munich, where the only downside is they didn't win 3-0 or 4-0.
Yeah.
Which is what the result should have been. They were sensational. Now, you wonder and you think, oh, they've missed the trick. They've played really well. They've totally outplayed Bayern, but they've only got the one goal. On the other hand, you could say, well, if they've done it once, can they do the same? Can they play the same style? Can they play the same to the same level? And this time, can they take a chance or two? So, you know, they had a goal disallowed. They had the bar, they had the post. They had another couple of really good chances that they should have scored from. And I think 3 or 4 nil would have been a fair reflection of that game. So that tells you how well Villarreal played. Don't underestimate Villarreal. Don't underestimate Unai Emery. Don't underestimate any team from La Liga in the Champions League. The quality is there. A sensational manager in European football. They've put themselves in a position where 1-0 up going to Bayern Munich. I still would make them favourites, because I can't imagine Bayern are going to get caught out again playing as badly as they did. But if Bayern think it's going to be easy again and think, oh, we're only 1-0 down, Villarreal will make them pay. So the Farmers League could end up with 3 in the last 4. If you look at the Atletico Madrid, are only 1 goal behind against City. Real Madrid are 3 went up against Chelsea. Villarreal lead Bayern Munich. I'm not predicting it, but it's possible.
Yes, I don't think anyone really says they're a farmer. If people say they're a farmer, they're just being silly, isn't it? I think that's just Twitter banter.
I detest that phrase.
It's
childish. It's immature. Yeah. There's great teams all over different leagues in Europe. Every league in Europe is different. Every league now and then as a period where you think it's the best league in Europe. There's no real context to put it in. Spanish teams have won European competitions for over 20 years now, relentless titles in terms of European football. It's a silly argument. Some leagues are stronger than others, of course they are. But, you know, it's the point you're making about disrespect from the UK to other leagues in Europe should stop.
Yeah.
It's childish, it's pointless, it's social media banter at its very best. Worst.
Yeah. Right. So let's have a look at the bottom. What we haven't done yet is Elche 1, Real Sociedad 2. Elche get drawn in, aren't they? Espanyol 1, Celta Vigo 0. And Osasuna beat Alaves. The all three coach strategy going on there, Terry, too. And it's working as well as it ever does.
Yeah. And Alaves Mendilibar has gone since we haven't spoken about that on the podcast. Julio Velasquez has replaced him.
Yeah.
We spoke briefly to try and find out what we could about him. He's had a number of jobs in, mainly in Portugal in recent years. I have no recollection of him being manager of Betis or Villarreal in the second division. Betis for a short spell as well. They were Alaves at the weekend. Very little attacking play. Osasuna missed a penalty, then scored a winner late on. So Alaves nearly got the draw. But draws are no good to Alaves at the moment. So Velasquez has got to change that mindset under Mendilibar to becoming more attacking with, how many games? 7 games left. I can't see the change working in time if there is to be a change. And they're struggling now, I have to say. I think I mentioned earlier in the podcast about not being sure it goes down. I'm pretty sure Alaves is going to be one of the teams relegated.
Yeah, because what's happened is it's dragged the... So the Elche, Rayo, who play tonight, it's one of these ones. And it always happens. Every season, you tend to think, oh, those lot are safe. But... They're not if they keep losing games. And if that happens, then they're in trouble. So if Rayo and Elche keep on losing games, they're very much catchable now.
Yeah, I think it's clear, isn't it? Rayo down. Rayo play Monday night.
Yeah.
And if they were to get the win, I think they'd be okay. But they haven't won for ages. Getafe have been on an excellent run, but they're still involved in the thick of the action. The new manager bounce has worked for some clubs. Cadiz are better under Sergio Gonzalez, Mallorca will be better under Aguirre. The Granada one hasn't worked yet with Ruben Torrecilla. 4 games, 1 win. No major transformation there. Difficult game at Sevilla, so it's hard to judge him on that performance and that result. So it's up for grabs. I mean, even Levante come away from that game against Barcelona without a point. At one stage, they're looking likely to win the game. But astonishing to think that when you see the performance of Levante, how they've only won 1 game in, what was it? Well, they only won 1 game in the first half of the season. And yet you still look at them and think, how have they had a season that's been led them to being everybody's first pick for relegation since about week 12? They've managed to scramble off the bottom. They look really good going forward. They've got good midfield players. They lack the quality in defence. So it is up for grabs. It's, as I say, nothing different from Alaves despite the new manager. Elche were unlucky. We have to talk about the penalty from Isak.
Oh, yes. Yes, go on.
You can only lead in that one, didn't they? Big Carrillo scored after 3 minutes and you're thinking, oh, this will be a massive surprise. Real Sociedad don't score a lot of goals, but they managed to get 2 with Soloff and Lenormand, both headers. And Isak's penalty, it's a penalty given.
Yeah.
Foul on Soloff. And Isak has that stuttered, really evident, runs up and stops, really stops. And the goalkeeper dives at Badia and he rolls it into the other corner. The referee stops it, disallows the goal with no retake and gives a yellow card to Isak.
Yeah, the yellow card is harsh.
Kind of sums up his season, doesn't it? Yeah. So much promise, 5 goals, 1 penalty last week in the last minute to when Real Sociedad beat Espanyol. That gets him up and running. Another penalty this week, he thinks, I'll take that. Start getting my goal tally up. It's a hard one. I'm not sure it should be a retake. That's my feeling. Should it be retaken?
I don't know, because you've effectively fouled, haven't you, by stopping. The law says don't stop. I mean, it's a fine line because players hesitate and you sort of think,
all the time.
Did he, you know, is he still moving? To the point where, with this, I was watching, when I saw this first, it was on my laptop. And I wasn't sure if the laptop had frozen because he stands still, doesn't he? And he's in a weird position because he's halfway through his kick, isn't he?
It's like exactly.
He changed his mind, isn't he?
I
don't know what he's doing. Is he waiting for the keeper, but then the keeper's slower to move than he thinks. And so he's in a sort of weirdly contorted position, hasn't he? Halfway through kicking the ball. And then obviously,
The penalty went in. We have to say that. He was successful in the... In the penalty, actually went in, didn't it?
Yes.
But it was obviously, but you do see lots of players do it. And I've always wondered where that line is.
Because
we know it's a law now of the game.
Yeah.
But this is the first time I can recollect seeing it. I can't
think
of any other example.
But I also can't remember as quite as an egregious example of a player stopping because he really did stop, didn't he? He really sort of literally to the point where. Momentarily, I thought the laptop was, because you watch it on your internet connection, aren't you? So I'm thinking, yes.
And a yellow card.
Yeah.
That's it. So, I wasn't aware you got a yellow card for it.
No, I wasn't either. Because
we've never seen it applied.
Too many, I think, my point that everything is a penalty. I don't think you always need a yellow card when you've conceded a penalty, which they always seem to give as well, don't they? Some of the weird handballs that you see now, some of the, the ones where it's barely a foul. They always, once they've had a look at the VAR, they always seem to go back and yellow card them. And I'm thinking,
yeah,
it was barely a foul, to be honest with you. So it doesn't need a yellow card, but you always get one, don't you? I think we'll leave it there, Terry. So we'll be back for the Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL, if you want to join us. Thank you to all the new Patreons who've joined in recently. We'll be back to talk about the European Games. Business time, isn't it? We'll see how La Liga is faring in that context of European football this week. And have a quick look ahead to certainly one big game, Sevilla and Real Madrid coming up this weekend. So enjoy your week. Patrons, we'll see you later in the week. And everybody else, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you soon.